Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Today's podcast is sponsored by Pavilion Payments, which empowers gaming institutions to create an enhanced patron experience with a complete suite of integrated payment solutions that enable safe, secure, and trusted cash access at the cage, on the casino floor, or online. Learn more at pavilionpayments.com. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and today our guest is Paul Hobson, the president and general manager of the Sahara Hotel Casino in Las Vegas, who will talk about the transition from the SLS and back to the Sahara. The establishment of the SLS from the former Sahara didn't go according to plan. The LA hospitality brand didn't resonate in Las Vegas, along with some regulatory hurdles, so when Alex Moreno, the Southern California businessman and owner of the Los Angeles Angels, purchased the property to go along with his Grand Sierra Resort in Reno, he got a bargain. Even though SLS had renovated the former Sahara, Moreno began a program to once again redevelop the original Sahara brand and another renovation. He brought in Las Vegas casino veteran Paul Hobson to lead their effort, and the results are dramatic. Hobson explains how it worked in a discussion with me at his offices in the Sahara in January. Paul, it's great to see you here. Just walking quickly through the property here, it's really an improvement. And even though the SLS, they did a nice job, this is another step up.
Well, thank you so much for that. You had a second to talk to our designer who we just happened to pass by in the hallway, and she's done absolutely amazing job transitioning from what was the SLS when we got it to bringing back the name of Sahara to the Strip.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that transition from SLS to Sahara. As I said, it was a nice property, you know, when it was SLS, but bringing it back to Sahara, you know, kind of bringing back to its roots. So how difficult was the transition, and what did you do to accomplish that?
Well, I think the most challenging part of doing it was, like, you know, continuing to be open all the way through it.
Right. Yes.
So when you're doing a piecemeal and you're interrupting the business as you go about it, you know, it's very, very challenging operationally, but I think that the results certainly speak for themselves. It was worth it. I think we took something that was, you know, very heavy on the nightlife vibe. You know, everything that SBE did was clubs, so the whole place sort of felt like a like a dark nighttime club.
Right.
And what Alex really wanted to do was, you know, sort of bring back some warmth and light and some great finishes that, you know, create an environment where people want to spend time, day or night, right? So, you know, and I would say that one thing that SLS did, because when the Sahara went out, it definitely wasn't a premium product.
Right.
SLS was a good palate cleanser, I think, for the period of time that it was installed, and it really laid the foundation to reintroduce Sahara as more of a premium, upscale, boutique, intimate property.
Sure.
You know, that's what we've that's what we're striving for, and that's what we've done in our design.
Sure. So as you walk through the hallways, you see some of the pictures of the old Sahara, and you know, in the old days, it was the premium property in Vegas. You know, with the Wayne Newton started here, and then so many of the great artists used to come here.
So what do you believe? Louis Prima.
You know, exactly. Yeah. Right. So what do you believe is the legacy of the Sahara?
Well, I think that you know, we want to lay claim to some of that authenticity. A lot of times, Las Vegas, you know, tears down its legendary properties to make way for what's next. What we wanted to do is, you know, sort of claim that history as our own and use that, you know, foundationally for, you know, creating new Sahara. And it really is all new, but those items that remind us of the past, you know, give us a reference point and things that we want to, you know, continue to evolve and build on going forward. So we do have some really great pictures on the walls, almost, you know, museum-esque.
Sure, that you know
you can learn a little bit about the people that have passed through here in the 72 years that it's been a fixture on Las Vegas Boulevard.
Yeah, no question. So you've been leading the property for almost 6 years now, and you mentioned there were a lot of changes, but what were some of the most key changes in your view?
I think, you know, obviously having a single owner like Alex is, you know, very different for today's Las Vegas. It used to be like that all the time, right? That every property had an individual owner, and that individual sort of had their thumbprint on everything that was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's the exception. You know, outside of Alex, maybe you have Phil Ruffin.
Sure,
maybe you got Derek. downtown.
Right.
But really, you know, being able to work to fulfill what he sees is the vision for the property, and not, you know, having corporate interests that we're reporting to or a board of directors. You got one guy,
sure, right?
And you want to do something, you go and talk to that guy.
Right.
Exactly. And you go yes or no, and you go fast.
Right.
So I think that what we've done here over the last 6 years, might have taken, you know, more than a decade in a different environment.
Right.
But, you know, we just hit the ground running and went.
Sure. So when you have a single owner, it's pretty easy to turn the ship, you know, not a huge corporation.
Yeah, it's a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I mean, we're talking about the only minority-owned casino on the Las Vegas Strip.
Right.
And, you know, that sort of helps us, you know, in a lot of ways, because a lot of people are looking for, you know, diversity spend in their group meeting business, things like that. And then you also have a workforce that, you know, looks a lot like Alex's, mm-hmm. you know, extended Hispanic family, and gives us, you know, good standing with that crew as well.
Right. So Alex Merlo also owns the Grand Sierra in Reno, which is really, I guess it is the premier property in Reno. It's a gorgeous property, and they've done a great job with that. So how involved is he with the operations and the strategy for the Sahara?
Oh, very. Like, mm-hmm. with both of those properties.
Okay.
He owned GSR first.
Right.
And that used to be a Kirk Corcoran property.
Right.
So very, very big.
Mm-hmm.
Covers a lot of ground.
Right.
You know, built on a big plot of land,
right,
as well.
Sure.
In fact, has so much land that, you know, right now he's pursuing building an arena,
right,
similar, mm-hmm. to T-Mobile,
sure,
is to Las Vegas. An arena for Reno,
right,
that would be, you know, adjacent to everything that's happening at GSR.
Sure.
So that's, you know, certainly an exciting time. But, you know, much as he's done here, took what was, you know, sort of a challenged property, updated it, you know, where the investment made the most sense,
mm-hmm.
turned it into something, you know, new and special and different than what it was, and had great success. Now, very, very different market,
sure, right?
You know,
sure.
Reno to Las Vegas, it's much harder to stand out, you know, in Las Vegas, given, you know, the depth of the offerings here.
Sure.
But there is a price of admission, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got to be at a very high level just to be in the game. Up there, I think that the high level there are really, really stands out, and like you said, makes them the premier property,
sure,
in that market.
No question. We've done some stories and interviews with them up there. There's some really talented executives up there. Do you all have get together and have brainstorming sessions or talk about, you know, what you can do with one property, maybe you can do it another?
Absolutely. No, we are very connected as a team. I mean, being owned as a family business makes us all part of that,
right,
family.
Right.
So, you know, certainly when we're finding success with certain things, you know, we want to share it with them, and vice versa. And, you know, when we're looking at opportunities, you know, to deploy, you know, resources, systems across, mm-hmm. two platforms instead of one,
right,
you know, looking for advantageous pricing in that regard and you know, a little bit more volume to our purchases, you know,
right,
that's also a great affiliation to have.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was Alex's first property, really,
yeah, sure, right,
in a lot of ways, you know, his baby,
mm-hmm.
and you know what he knows about the casino business, he first learned there, and the people that taught him that are still members of the family, and
right,
you know, and we do indeed share a lot.
Sure. Okay. Great. So you kind of just getting started when the pandemic hit. How difficult was that for the Sahara in particular?
Man, super difficult.
Yeah.
It just you asking the question sort of takes me back to that point in time where, you know,
you don't want to get depressed.
Where you a bit, no, we were just like really starting to hit our stride in a lot of ways.
Right.
Con Expo, mm-hmm. was here.
Yeah.
And that
right,
that trade show was bringing, you know, the right kind of customers,
mm-hmm.
and the right kind of price, and we were, you know, looking really nice, and at the tail end of that show everything just fell apart.
Right.
And you said, you got to close.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear something like, you got to close, and I'm looking at the doors, and
right,
they don't even have locks on them.
Exactly,
Roger.
Right,
I mean, there's no locks on the doors. How
right,
do we close? How do we secure this place? And you know, it was a it was definitely a sad week as we prepared for that. And I remember, you know, with the rest of the management team, we were down in the walk-in coolers and on the receiving dock, and we were putting together bags,
mm-hmm.
of items, everything, you know, produce,
right,
cauliflower.
Right.
loose six packs of beer, you know, things like that that we could share with our team as they were leaving, not knowing, you know, when we might see them again and what the and what the future held, you know, for that near term, what they were going to need in their lives to get by.
Right.
And so we were making up care packages of the things that we knew that, you know, we weren't going to be able to keep around, and send them out the door with it. So that, you know, really really resonated as we got a little bit further into it, you know, keeping that core team together to, you know, basically prepare for the day that, you know, we knew that was coming, that we'd be able to reopen.
Sure.
But then reopening in that diminished capacity in those, you know, in those couple of months, you know, after what was it, in June probably, you know, that was super challenging as well. So I know every operator you talk to will tell you the same thing. It was you know, pretty unprecedented, a lot of improvisation, a lot of ad-libbing, trying to do right by everybody, from you know, the guests to the regulators to the team members, to make sure that we were in good standing for when we emerged from, you know, some of that limited capacity. And certainly that's the way it played out, but it lasted a lot longer than I would have expected.
Sure.
And the recovery certainly wasn't immediate. We still have the hangover in Las Vegas, I think, from, you know, we don't have the same level of international travel
that we had
prior to that, and that disruption, you know, will eventually return, but it's not coming suddenly.
Sure,
that's for sure.
Right, great. So, were you able to do some of the changes, you know, while the property was closed? I mean, you mentioned doing some of the construction and things like that, you know, when you're open, but
yes.
So did that kind of help you a little bit?
Well, it did in a way. And Alex, you know, certainly all of his businesses were disrupted through the pandemic.
Right.
And he's the kind of guy that's reinvesting, you know, the money as it comes in to build, you know, the host of things that he's involved with, right? So, you know, capital was a little bit scarce for sure, but his commitment never wavered.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we were able to do was continue development of the restaurants in particular. Like, we had moved our primary restaurant lineup from what was the, you know, sort of the middle back of the casino. Mm-hmm. We wanted to put that on Las Vegas Boulevard.
Sure,
so we pivoted to that side.
Okay.
And we were able to keep construction going on those projects so that, you know, we were able now to be fully outfitted on that side. But it does bring to mind all the supply chain disruptions that were in place. Well, we were entirely finished with one of our great restaurants here, with a great James Beard Award winning chef named Sean McClain. It's called Bala, Italian Soul. It really terrific. If you haven't tried it, you got to try it. But we were done except for one piece of equipment. We needed the air handler that was designed specifically for, you know, the HVAC in in that room. And months went by till we could, you know, finally get it and install it.
Yeah.
But, you know, makes it all the more remarkable that Fountain Blue was able to open on time.
Right.
Because, you know, we were having that sort of disruption. I can't imagine the things that they ran into as they tried to finish that building.
Sure. Great. So we were talking about the legacy of Sahara. Does the legacy include some of the old customers of the original Sahara?
I haven't met a lot of those, to be honest with you.
Because they'd be pretty old right now, right?
Certainly, certainly the Sahara has been around a long time, but we have had the chance to talk to people that Sahara was an important part of their lives, you know, coming up, maybe working here as they were getting into the industry. A lot of people have, you know, some sort of tie to it in their past, right? And, you know, so we sort of have continuity in that thread that runs through the community in that manner.
Sure. Okay. So, you know, every property in Las Vegas says locals are important to them, but locals are really kind of abandoning the Strip with this, you know, parking fees now. I just drove into your garage and you have no parking fee.
Fee, right? You're able to drive right
into
the park.
Right?
Well, and I hope you had a good experience, you know, leading up to that, because, you know, it is really hard to get into the place's Center Strip.
Right.
And, you know, where we sit off of Sahara, it's easy to hop off of, you know, I-15.
Right.
You know, head to Las Vegas Boulevard. It's a quick quick right and quick left, and you're in you're in our free parking garage. Mm-hmm. And you know, we think that that, you know, definitely is it is an amenity that we enjoy putting out there, and you know, being able to tell people you know, if you want to come out and have dinner at Bizarre Meats one night, celebrate a special occasion, that type of thing. You know, parking's not going to be a problem for you. You get in easy, you get out easy, and there's and there's no fee.
So, how important is the locals market to you?
How important is what?
The locals market to you.
Well, I think that the most important part of it is, you know, everybody that works here lives here.
Right.
So, as far as the labor market goes, we're deep in the locals market.
Right.
But you know, I think most people will tell you that your strongest locals market is the rooftops around you,
right?
And some of our most compelling rooftops are, you know, in the high-rise condo towers that we have here. So, so Turnberry is a really important, you know, development for us. The Allure Tower, you know, right up on Sahara is also, not to mention, you know, some of the old neighborhoods like Scotch Avenue and things like
some
that.
Some of them are very elevated neighborhoods these days too.
Right. Yeah. So so we want to be those people's place, you know, for their outings, for their entertainment, for their meals, for their gaming, and you know, we do quite well with that. I think that, you know, we're fairly aggressive in our club and our offerings, and it's segmented by local and non-local. And we try to structure things in a way that, you know, would please those real frequent guests that might be here two or three times a week, you know, versus, you know, the people that are coming, you know, once or twice a year and flying in from another market. So we certainly take that into account, and we've had good luck growing that, you know, since the SLS era.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So you have a new neighbor, the Fontainebleau, opened about a month ago. They're having some operational problems, but nonetheless, it's a closer casino to you. People will walk there and maybe walk a little further to see you.
Yeah, well, we definitely share some DNA with them, and not just where we sit, but you know, a lot of the folks that, you know, were working with us in building this out, you know, wound up taking positions there as well, you know, from line level to upper management.
Sure.
So there is a connection, and you always, you know, wish people the best when they're when they find an opportunity they think is going to be great for them and take that step.
Sure.
So it's nice to have friends over there to talk to and sort of compare notes and be able to cooperate with on when you have the ability to collaborate on some stuff. It's important to us that they're successful and they do well, and it, you know, really brings some gravity to this end.
Right.
It's early still,
as
I'm sure that they would tell you. Mm-hmm. I mean, 3,700 rooms is a lot of rooms. A lot of rooms. And to start from, you know, no presence in Las Vegas or in gaming really, and build that business and build that database. You know, there's going to be a ramp up, and you know, so we're certainly prepared for that. I hope that they are. But we think that long term, that, you know, it will be a symbiotic relationship, and, you know, just as people enjoy circulating Center Strip, you know, having a couple options for people, whether to stay in, you know, here and being able to visit, you know, Fontainebleau or Resorts World, or they're staying at Fontainebleau and them coming this way to check us out or change their luck or, you know, have a little change of pace. I mean, that doesn't do anything but help.
Right. So you mentioned database. You know, you opened this SLS open without a database, and when you came in, you didn't have any really a deep Las Vegas database. How have you been building that?
Well, as I said before, trying to do things, you know, incentive wise in our in our club that appeals to the right type of person.
Right.
We would like to utilize, you know, a good portion of our hotel rooms for casino customers, and have them take, you know, a bigger proportion of our overall inventory.
Right.
You just need to find qualified customers to do that. So, you know, we've done some innovative things in that regard, not just on the club side, but also on the team member side.
Right.
You know, dealers are in short supply these days, and it used to be that, you know, casinos would run their own dealer school, and then, you know, sort of the private sector turned over, and if you wanted to be a dealer, you would go pay somewhere to you know, teach you how to deal blackjack. What we did is we sort of reverted back to running our own dealer school, advertising for the right kind of person that, you know, is really into service, wants to be in this industry and grow our own grow our own dealers that are, you know, going to provide the type of guest experience that that we see as being, you know, so important to us and our future. And, you know, that's been going great. We've been at it for about 8 months now. Mm-hmm. We've had 4 graduating classes.
Okay.
We've had minimal turnover of those people that have gone through that. And, you know, we really, it's gratifying not just to see the results in revenue, but also to see the results in our survey and our service scores that, you know, our guests notice the difference.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to actually hire the person you think will have the service background or will understand service is important as a dealer as much, just as important as being accurate.
Yeah, and I think that that is one thing as a community that we could do a little bit better. I don't think that people know the magnitude of the the opportunities that Las Vegas offers.
Sure.
It doesn't stop with dealers.
Right. Sure.
I mean, I don't think that a lot of people, you know, say living in you know, San Bernardino,
right,
know that, you know, if they moved up the road, you know, 3-4 hours, you know, that there's, you know, there's jobs here that you could come in with minimal experience.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a couple, you know, you could both get jobs in housekeeping pretty soon. I mean, immediately, within a couple weeks, your household income is $100,000.
Yeah.
Right. And you get free health care, right? Because that's paid for, you know, through us.
Right.
Through the union, right? So we're paying for that, and pension, and more than a living wage.
Right.
And, you know, you all of a sudden you got enough, you know, to make your car payment. You got enough to buy a place, right?
Right, sure.
You send your kids to school. I mean, I talk to people that have been here for a long time, and have raised generations that very way, and their kids are, you know, getting out of college now, right?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And they're, you know, entering professions that are making Las Vegas, you know, even stronger, and it's really a great cycle. But I don't think that I don't think people know, and I want more people to understand that, because, you know, we just aren't automatically creating more people to work in this industry.
Sure,
we need to work at that.
Right. Okay, great. So tell us your strategy on entertainment. I've been in the showroom. Obviously, it's a legendary showroom with, like you mentioned, Louis Prima and Wayne Newton and you know, hundreds of other legendary acts have been in there. But when it was redesigned, it was done pretty well. I really enjoyed, you know, I went to a conference there when it first opened. And,
oh, that's great.
And, you know, I really liked the showroom. How has that been working for you, and what, how does that affect your entertainment strategy?
Well, if we're going to talk about entertainment at Sahara, first and foremost, we got to talk about Magic Mike Live.
Okay,
right? And that show doesn't occur in the theater. That occurs in a space that we built specifically for them. And it's been a great association with us and Channing Tatum. And, you know, put that show on stage in a bespoke theater.
I just did a podcast with Simon Thomas from the Hippodrome, where
he's
got a Magic Mike show too.
Yeah, exactly.
He just can't stop praising
it. Yeah. So Simon has been here. We had had a meal at Noodle Den.
Yeah.
And we went and saw the show together and compared notes about the experience of being in business with them. Great guy.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, that's been a great traffic generator for us, and, you know, it's really sort of best in class in sort of a female celebration show. It's not it's not a striptease thing.
No,
it's really a production show with a lot of great, you know, performances, from dancing to singing to telling a story. You know, there's some great props that come in and out. It's just, you know, a really, really fun night out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went with my wife, and it was a rewarding experience.
Yeah.
So that's fun. But as it relates to the theater, we you know, right now aren't continuously programmed in there, but we do some promoted shows, and, you know, it is a nice setup for that, because it's fairly turnkey. Somebody can come in, there's a video element to it, the audio's all plug and play and ready to go, and we can, you know, get something going really quickly in there.
Right.
We are in discussions with others about installing, you know, more of a permanent production show.
Right.
And I think we'll be ready to announce something really soon. But I think it's the kind of thing that, you know, sort of will appeal to a wider array of people than Magic Mike does, but also, you know, in a really fun way, and something that isn't happening right now in Las Vegas. So it'll be it'll be unique in that aspect of it. So when that happens, I'll call you first.
Great. So I know you've got a really aggressive food and beverage strategy as well. You mentioned the new restaurant, the new Italian restaurant. I got a chance to go to Bizarre Meats one time, and I thought it was one of the most fantastic meals I ever had.
That's a universal sentiment.
Yeah, it's an incredible property. So where are you going with that strategy then?
Well, I think in a lot of ways you could say that those restaurants are emblematic of how we see the property, right? Mm-hmm. Like I said, Magic Mike was best in class.
Right.
We have a lot of best in class, restaurants as well. You know, we have a best in class, sports bar in Chickies and Pete's. Like mm-hmm. that's an East Coast brand that you won't find outside of the Philadelphia area, right? But we were their first. Their first restaurant, in the West,
right?
And it's a licensed concept. Mm-hmm. They came in and taught us everything we needed to know about the brand, and we executed every day. And they couldn't be more pleased, with us, nor us with them. So it's great. We're in the middle of football playoffs right now, Super Bowl mm-hmm. coming up, and we've become that spot. You talk about locals, we've become that spot that a lot of locals want to come, mm-hmm. And spend the day watching.
Right.
Watching games with us, mm-hmm. But it's also a food forward sports bar. Like, it's not just about coming and getting a beer and watching the game. Like the things that we're putting in front of you on the menu, are really special. Mm-hmm. It's called, Crab House well. So it's tons of seafood as mm-hmm. well as, Philly cheesesteaks. So, that's a really great feature for us. And you move one restaurant up and you'll find the Noodle Den. Mm-hmm. And we've got, some of the greatest, Asian artisans, mm-hmm. making dim sum and hand-pulled noodles in that restaurant, as well as wok favorites, the things that you'd find in a great Chinese restaurant. And not only is that great for the people that are staying in the hotel and looking for something quick to eat, but it's also good for the Asian customers that are playing in our baccarat room.
Yeah.
And so it sort of serves the purpose of reinforcing the casino brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move up one more space and you're at Bala Italian Soul, and I told you about Chef Sean mm-hmm. and being a James Beard winner.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know this, but he was also an Iron Chef winner.
Oh, really?
Like he competed on the TV show Iron Chef
that one.
And won his episode.
Okay.
But he's a he's an amazing partner, super creative, but developed that restaurant specifically for us mm-hmm. and what we were looking for. And it has really, great but novel Italian mm-hmm. Italian favorites, sort of presented in a way you might not have seen somewhere else, or crafted in mm-hmm. a way that just elevates it with the ingredients and the technique that mm-hmm. they use. So super happy with that. And it's a great room, has olive trees in it, has patio windows in the front, so you're sort of like you're on the veranda overlooking the strip. So that's pretty cool. And then of course you mentioned Bizarre Meats, mm-hmm. and that's the next stop up that row. And to be in business with Jose Andreas right now, I don't think that you could find a more popular or beloved chef for his philanthropy as well as his skills in the kitchen. And that's become something of an institution. We're almost 10 years in on that restaurant, and filling it every night. And and it's not a short experience, right?
No, I mean, it's
when
not,
you go there, you're going to be there for a couple hours,
and
you're going to enjoy every minute of it, and every morsel they put in front of you. So that's great. And we also have our coffee shop, which is called Zephyr's, mm-hmm. and they get to your breakfast and lunch, and we have a great street taco place called Uno Mas, and those are both our concepts. But that culinary quality, that's also part of our DNA, and we really lead with that in a lot of ways. Have a really skilled team that put those restaurants together and execute them night in and night out. Really great.
Great. So you also have a lot of meeting space, some really nice ballrooms. I've been in several of them, and you know, it's easy to get to, you know, it's not like you have to walk all the way across the property like some Las Vegas meeting areas. And also you're at the terminus of the monorail, so people can get to a Las Vegas Convention Center or anything up the strip very, very easily. So how important is that in your overall strategy of the meetings and conventions business?
No, very important. And you mentioned the monorail, of course, so that's a great connection to any citywide that's going on that's utilizing the convention center. So it makes us, you know, a real compelling place to stay for that. But I wish we indexed a little bit more to meeting space, to be honest with you. So I could use more, you know, we're kind of a tweener, I think we can comfortably handle, you know, 500 or 600 person groups, but that puts us out of, you know, sort of the 1,000 or 1,200 people that we'd like to see. This week we're very busy with the group that's taken up 1,100 of our hotel rooms, you know, tonight, tomorrow, and the next. And to pull that off, you know, we're utilizing, you know, the restaurants during the day that, you know, kind of serve their meals and, you know, sort of use those as adjuncts to the meeting space to be able to do the program. But, you know, what's cool about that is I think that's more memorable than having your breakfast or lunch in a in a meeting room.
You're kind of in a
more novel environment.
Right.
You know, sort of fun venue.
It gets them to know the property, and maybe they'll come back when they're not in a convention.
Yeah, well, you definitely get to see a lot more of it and see the quality of it.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that I would just drive home about, you know, Sahara is that it's really all new. And if you have, you know, a notion in your head of what Sahara was, you know, in the year 2000,
you need to wipe that
clean.
Sure, right.
And you need to come
exactly
in
right.
and check this out, because it really is, you know, sort of a premium and, you know, fun property to experience.
Sure, no question. So we've had a lot of great events in Vegas over the past year. We just had F1 in November. It didn't come by the property, but it was still on the strip. And they, well, of course, we got the Super Bowl coming in a couple of weeks as well. How did you do during F1, and what are you doing to prepare for the Super Bowl?
Well, of those two events, I will tell you that for us, Super Bowl much stronger than F1.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think that, you know, Las Vegas is becoming, you know, more known as a place for, you know, sports that, that actually you're experiencing the event here. I am fully supportive of having, you know, F1 here. I think that they just need to change the approach a little bit to attract broader range of people. You know, it was horribly disruptive for, you know, for everybody, you know, that was on the race course.
Didn't like it.
And the only people that are really, you know, touting how great it was, you know, were those premium properties that were on the race course. I think the, you know, LVCVA certainly owes it to everybody to work with Formula One to make sure that the make sure that abundance is more widely spread.
Sure, no question about that. So, what do you see as the future of Sahara? It's such a great location, and you've got, you know, you have Fountain Blue now. You know, there's actually talk of them building the A's Stadium across the street at the festival grounds. I don't know if, who knows where that's going to end up.
Well, that was early on.
Yeah.
I mean, that seemed to be, you know, to use the F1 term, that seemed to have pole position,
yeah,
you know, for a while,
right,
in where the stadium might be. For us, you know, if that were to turn around and come to be, that would definitely be a game changer for the neighborhood.
Sure.
And I think, you know, just for Las Vegas in general, it's such a more balanced place.
Yeah, it makes,
you know,
more sense,
that,
I think.
For
it,
that feature, I mean, not just for us, but for downtown,
for
the rest of the North Strip. And I already said how easy it is to get in and out of here.
Sure, right.
I don't think you can say the same for I-15 and Tropicana. Right.
I mean, they have at Tropicana now. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it. I guess it's one of the downfalls, maybe, of, you know, sort of being outside of an incorporated city where it makes planning a little bit harder and the land use. But if there was a way to steer the A's to that location, I mean, we certainly lobbied for it and would be fully supportive and of, you know, doing everything we could to make that happen. But that being said, you know, we we realized that, you know, the cavalry's not charging over the right. over the hill to make us successful, right?
Exactly.
You know, yeah. We have to do the work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's what we're about. We're trying to build those relationships with our guests and mm-hmm. with our team that, right. you know, will make this a vibrant and sustainable business for the next 70 years.
Great.
And I think that, you know, certainly having new development like, you know, Fountain Blue, freeing up that lot that's next to us in between Fountain Blue and right. Sahara, yep. you know, to maybe get a new feature going there, mm-hmm. you know, that's encouraging.
Sure, right.
That, you know, some neat stuff will happen in the future, and, you know, we'll be there, you know, ready to not only make it happen, but receive it when it does.
Right, great. Well, congratulations on what you've done here. It's a beautiful property, and I think once people start to realize that this isn't the old Sahara, that it's the new Sahara, I think there'll be a lot of people that will continue to come here and make it their base in Las Vegas.
Well, thanks, Roger. Tell your friends.
Great. I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast, sponsored by Pavilion Payments, the industry's leading cashless payment provider. To learn more about the topics discussed today and all the important issues in gaming, check out Global Gaming Business Magazine. For a free virtual copy of the magazine, subscribe at ggbmagazine.com. To stay current with the weekly news of the gaming industry, subscribe to ggbnews.com. Use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.